Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name is Sammy James and welcome to the show. Loads going on in today's podcast. We'll have the final word from Saturday's 0-0 draw against Wolves at a sweltering Molineux. Thank God it has cooled down a little bit. We'll have all the latest transfer gossip as Fulham close in on not just one, but potentially two wingers to solve our crisis out wide. We've got an interview with Johnny Langtry, who works for the Fulham Foundation. He's part of the Kix Refugee Programme. I spoke to him a little earlier and they're doing great work there at the Foundation. So he gave me all the lowdown on that. We'll look at the under-21s as Luke Harris bagged a hattie against Chelsea on Monday night. We've got a few of your questions and a big preview of Saturday's London derby against Brentford at the Cottage. A massive, massive game that realistically Fulham do need to win, but it's going to be extremely difficult. We all saw their game on Saturday against Man United. And it is the regular Thursday club joining me, Peter Rutzler, Fulham's writer for The Athletic UK. Hello.
Hello, Sammy. Hello, Jack. How are we?
Good, thank you. In the office today, makes a change, bit of a change of scenery.
Privet Drive, as Jack described it. It is spacious. It's a lovely little room, but looks very condensed for you guys, I guess.
Yeah, there is a little element of under the stairs cupboard to it. It's quite a nice under stairs cupboard, but it does look quite small and cozy in there. And Jack, who gave me a heart attack when he came on the screen because I thought was wearing a Brentford shirt. It's the red and white stripes, though, of PSV Eindhoven, so he all is forgiven, but it is remarkably uncanny, and I nearly kicked you out of our chat.
Yeah, it does one podcast with the Athletic's Brentford correspondent and suddenly starts wearing red and white stripes on shirts. It's Umbro as well, which doesn't help, I think, is the other thing. I didn't really realise this until it all happened. I was just like, oh, that'll do. Check that out of the cupboard. And the array of football shirts I have in, that'll do. I have nearly given you a heart attack, but I can confirm that I haven't ever or will never wear a Brentford shirt. And that's that. Thank you.
Yeah, it was when I saw the two stars above the crest. I was like, oh, phew.
It's definitely
clearly
not Brentford.
Clearly can't be Brentford then. All right, let's do the final word from Wolves on Saturday. Peter, I'm not going to lie, I've never been more jealous of you when I realised where you were sitting in relation to where we were standing. You had shade, we did not. And I imagine you had a thoroughly much more enjoyable time for it. My God.
I'm not sure why everyone was complaining, to be honest. I had a lovely afternoon in the shade. No, to be fair, looking out at you guys, because I was directly opposite, and it just looked like you were all being roasted alive, to be honest. It was that kind of afternoon, wasn't it, with the heat? And then Wolves obviously whacked up the fire, the flames, which you can feel that right at the back of the stand. It doesn't matter where you're sitting. I mean, if you're at the front, I mean, there's no hope. There's singed eyebrows there, isn't there? But Yeah. For me, it was fine. I had a nice experience. Very cool press room as well, just to rub that in. Air conditioned, yeah, very, very pleasant. Almost too cold, actually. Had to go outside.
Put a warm jumper on.
exactly. But all good. Heat on the field. Mitch Richmond's got too hot, didn't he, towards the end? But a solid point. Everything feels quite solid at the moment. I keep coming back to that word and, yeah, I'm having to find synonyms for it, but yeah, that's where I feel Fulham are at the moment. It's all a bit solid.
Yeah, 2 points from two, Jack, is just safe, not spectacular. If we keep matching Liverpool point for point for the season, as someone mentioned on the Fulhamish Twitter, I don't actually know who tweeted that.
It was me.
I thought it might be you. Yeah. I saw that. As in your own words then, yeah, if we match Liverpool point for point, Jack, we'll probably be okay come May.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we shall see if we've managed to maintain that form. But look, we said this kind of at the start, 38 games, 38 points is probably enough to keep you up, right? You need to average a point a game, or should be at least in the kind of territory of keeping you up. Although I did tweet the weekend that it's going to be a dogfight, isn't it? Forest picking up a win there. Bournemouth picked up a win on the first week. There are teams everywhere, you know, Brentford beating United, the teams that we expect to fall apart, even kind of Southampton 2-0 down at Leeds, dragging back to get a point. It did feel like, you know, I've got kind of a weird feeling about all of it in that it's just, I think there's going to be maybe 8 or 9 teams in there, and it's just going to be quite uncomfortable for everyone for a long, long time. I think this is going to be a dogfight. But as Peter says, you know, and I was listening to Ian Wright on Stadio this morning or on Wright's house, and he was basically saying that, you know, the interests of teams at the bottom, especially if you get promoted, is get off the mark. Don't get left, you know, get off the mark and get away. And all three promoted sides have done so. You know, obviously both the other two have got a win. We've got two very, very credible draws. That's okay, but we're all away. And you know, you kind of want always from the start, you know, you're watching that game going, come on, West Ham. And I don't know how the ball didn't go in against Forest. And I have nothing against Nottingham Forest, right? But you just need three teams to be worse than us. And right now, it looks very confusing as to how all of this is going to pan out. So the things are now, can we kick on from a very decent start, is how I'd put it.
Peter, what was the reaction of Marco Silva like after the game? It was, I was walking out of Molineux, not 100% sure how to feel, because it was a valid point. It was a valiant point. It was a good display. We dug in at the end, but Mitrovic missing that penalty, it was such a missed opportunity, because imagine how good we'd be feeling right now, how positive we'd all be if we'd have already gotten away win first game of the season. And also it would have been a bit of a smash and grab the way if Mitrovic had stuck that penalty away, considering the chances that Wolves had had.
Yeah, Silva's reaction was probably, you know, he obviously likes to win games, and I think the fact that they let that go, he wasn't overly enthusiastic. I think it was pretty run-of-the-mill, really, to be honest. It wasn't overly happy with the performance, I think. I think there were parts of it that he wasn't particularly happy with at the start. Those early chances, obviously, with Neto and Hwang bursting down the Fulham right. But after that, I think he was pretty contented from what he was saying. You know, he felt the team had good control of the game. And you did feel that. I think there were moments, of course, where Wolves were very dangerous in transition. You know, they've got some really talented wingers who can hurt you in those moments, you know, like Pedro Neto, Daniel Pedence, but Gibbs White was good as well. But apart from that, when Wolves actually went through their build-up phases and their build-up play, Fulham felt pretty good. And they have done in both games, actually, really. Both pretty solid performances. Again, there's that word, sorry. Mm. I will improve my vocabulary. So overall, yeah, I think it was okay. I mean, sure, I mean, the missed penalty, he was eager to get across it. Mitrovic will take the next one, and I think basically keeping confidence up is the main thing from this. I mean, if he misses another one, then we're going to have to pull out the should Mitrovic take penalties debate, because we've done that before. We did it 2 years ago, and the evidence isn't good. But for now, it's, you know, keep his confidence up, keep the team's confidence up. I think there was frustration that he couldn't make the subs that he wanted to. He went straight on to talking about the transfer market, which we'll come on to. You know, obviously Bobby, Decker Devereed and Neskins Cabano, again, two really good shifts, but both of them, I think Bobby got a sort of a head injury at one point, but carried on. And then Neskins Cabano went down and went off with fatigue, if I remember rightly. So I think, but that's what a manager will do. He wants the strongest squad that he can get. And, you know, with the injuries, it's unfortunate, but that's the situation. But, you know, overall, I think there's so many reasons to be positive. You know, still unbeaten, 2 points. And when you compare it to the last two promotions, you know, the starts were the main thing. You know, we've talked about recruitment and why it's important to have the start. And Fulham have still got this good start. They've managed to do it this time. You know, unbeaten, 2 points on the board, off the mark, as Jack says. That's such a good base to build upon. So, it's just about taking it forward now. And interestingly, and I think, and I sort of touched on this in my piece. Sorry, just rambling on a bit now.
That's fine.
It's just the fact that defensively, Fulham have been solid. But the players who have done that are all players that, you know, got the team promoted last year, which underlines, one, the strength of the base, two, how much some of them have improved. And then, you know, three, it's that competition that's come in. You know, we've got these new recruits that have arrived, but it's not necessarily straightforward. I would say, based on performances, if you're basing things on merit, you know, it's not straightforward that Issa Diop takes Tim Ream's place. Tim Ream's been excellent in back-to-back games.
Yeah.
Marit Rodak, the same, has been good in goal. So these are quite difficult questions, which is a great, great position to be in. So, lots to take from those games.
It's a bit of a dilemma, isn't it, in so many ways? I mean, part of this, I think, is when you give teams adequate protection for defences and you give someone in front of them who is able to mop up in the way that João Paulinho is, you're basically able to, I think, not necessarily cover for deficiency, because I think that's unfair, but I think that you're seeing it in terms of there is less direct running at the centre-backs, which is something that we struggled with a little bit last year when people, you know, came through the middle and were running at us and we were stepping off. That wasn't necessarily something that we were particularly good at. That doesn't hasn't really happened this season so far, because the midfield too are able to stop things going in that way. And what it's meaning is that I think Tosin and Tim Ream are doing what they like doing, which is being able to, you know, clear up in the middle short and also get the ball and pass it out. And it means that we're playing to their strengths rather than kind of preying on their own weaknesses, which is important, I think, in this regard. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And Silva has not a question here, because it's more kind of a dilemma, I would suggest, in that if you drop players when they're playing well, you drop confidence within a squad. You can't drop Tim Ream after those two performances, I don't think. You can't drop Marit Rodak after those two performances. Maybe a little bit more of a case, but, you know, over the course of these two games, I think he's done really well. And I think that, you know, whilst there's a lot of people being like, oh, does he have to make a mistake to make a change? Because could that cost us points that we could otherwise pick up? And I completely understand that argument. If you're keeping morale high, you have to reward the players who are playing for you. Because if you have to put them back in and they're like, oh, well, I'm going to lose my shirt anyway, what's the point? Then you have a very difficult situation on your hands. So that's what I'm intrigued by, to see how Marcus Silva deals with. It's something that, you know, teams have to deal with full stop, and coaches in this league now, especially with bigger squads and substitute benches being larger and more subs being able to come on. Obviously, these questions are kind of exacerbated. But right now, it feels like the question is, does he stick or twist? And to twist, I think, would be relatively dangerous in some regards.
Yeah, Peter, you spoke to Marit Rodak for the piece that you released on Monday. One thing that I found particularly interesting in that piece was a tweet that you pulled up, which was that Rodak's save from Nunes in the Liverpool game was the most difficult save percentage-wise in that game week one. Apparently, it's only historically saved 42% of the time. I have no idea how people pull out these stats, but anyway, we'll definitely take it and run. But in Rodak was saying, Peter, that he sounded pretty bullish. You know, he started the season well, and he seems confident of, you know, putting in good performances at this level. It's a great dilemma for Silva to have, but yeah, one that we're going to have to keep a watchful eye on for the next few weeks.
Yeah, and those stats are great. That's John Harrison from goalkeeper.com. goalkeeperdata.com, I think. I hope I've got that right.
Yeah.
Really good for proper goalkeeping analysis. I actually used to play with John Harrison. He's a goalkeeper. Would shout wide if the ball was going wide, and he'll thank me for mentioning that. Marit was confident, and he should be, because as Jack was saying, he's put in two good performances. I think he's realistic about the situation. I thought it was interesting that, you know, obviously Marco Silva said in a press conference when he's been asked about it that he'd spoken to Paolo Gazzaniga and Rodak and the rest of the squad and just said, this is what I'm going to do this summer. And Rodak basically said that, yeah, I expected Bert Leno to sign. And I think he didn't say this, but from what you'd imagine is he was probably then looking at how Silva would approach the season. You know, obviously Leno didn't come in that early, which meant Rodak started the season, but he's kept his place after a good display against Liverpool. And, you know, it'll be a case again, will he keep his place? And he basically says that. He says, it's up to me now to keep the shirt. I've got it. It's tougher competition. You know, that can only be a good thing. And, you know, you can see from the way Aaron Ramsdale spoke about Leno when he left Arsenal, the kind of character that Leno is anyway. which will make things a lot easier, I suppose. But as I also touched on the piece, you know, Leno hasn't joined Fulham to sit on the bench. He's joined Fulham to play games, and it's a really tough dilemma. It's a really tough one. But you know, it's at some point Leno's going to come into the team. You surely he'll come into the team.
Crawley in the cup.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I can't wait.
Yeah, you would, wouldn't you? Because it's literally down the road.
I more meant just to see Bert Leno and Issa Diop playing Crawley, but yes, I'm also excited for that reason. Interestingly, I just started All or Nothing Arsenal last night, and so I watched the first episode, and that battle between Leno and Ramsdale at the start of the season is quite a big theme of the first episode, and you see it at the end how Leno plays the first three games, Ramsdale comes in, he starts the fourth game, which is against Norwich, keeps a clean sheet, makes a few saves, and we know the rest is history. He keeps his place after that, and we're obviously kind of seeing that now at Fulham. Now obviously Marek Rodak has not had the disastrous start that Arsenal did last year, where I think he conceded five against Man City. Arguably not really anything Bert Leno could have done about many of those goals, but it's just a nature of goalkeeping. Only one person can play. And when you have two good goalkeepers, I mean, with Fulham have arguably three good goalkeepers, but when you have two good goalkeepers, it's always going to be a battle for number one. As you say, Peter, it's a weird one because you know it's just a matter of time. There's no way Bert Leno is going to sit on our bench for 38 Premier League games, but when does it come in? Is it when Marek Rogat makes a mistake? Or is there just a natural cutoff at which Marco Silva goes, okay, now it's time because I want my more experienced goalkeeper in the net. So we'll wait and see.
The problem with doing that is if you do that and you pull Bert Leno in and he gets injured first game. Now, I know it's unlikely, right? We're talking about minuscule scenarios. But equally, if it happens and you turn back to Marek Rodak, but like, oh, you're back in, he'd be like, well, hang on. Like, why did I get dropped? If he hasn't made a mistake, that's the thing. You know, if you drop someone before they make a mistake, and there's no guarantee that he's going to make a mistake. You know, he's had two very, very good games. And so therefore, when you look at this, you go, if you drop him, do you kill all his confidence that he's currently playing with? And it's similar to someone like Tim Ream, I think, in that he's playing with such, you know, a wonderful confidence about him at the moment. And he's playing so well that if you replace him without due cause, what's that saying to him? You know, what's that saying to him about how he's valued within the squad? Now, I know that, you know, Tim Ream is a seasoned professional and an older member of this squad who has a role off the field as well as on it. But equally, if you drop him after he's playing well, he's a bit like, well, hang on, like, what have I done to deserve this? But yeah, it's a funny one. I just wanted to shout out Anthony Robinson because he was excellent again. And I do wonder if there's been a lot of talk, I think, of late that actually he rises to the level of competition. And I'm not 100% sure if it is actually that. I just think that considering Fulham are less dominant in the final, you know, and controlling the ball in the final third, it gives him the outlook that he's able to utilize his skill set to a fuller extent when he's playing in a slightly more counter-attacking team. Now, I know Fulham played on the counter a bit last season and that under Marcus Silva, but when Fulham are being asked to release pressure and he is being asked to be that release valve on that left-hand side and basically drive Fulham up the pitch, I think we're playing far more into his toolbox than perhaps we did last year, where he was asked to sort of, you know, roam around in that kind of middle third of the pitch and basically pick up the ball and cross from deeper positions because teams sat in that low block against us. I think that maybe this is actually the key to unlocking his capabilities, is that Fulham playing in transition means that Robinson's role it plays a little bit more to his skill set.
I think as well, just to add to that, I think you're absolutely spot on, Jack, about how the way Fulham are playing, they've been quite direct in both these games, actually, and that really does help. But I do think it's worth highlighting just how good he's been defensively. It's just, he's been superb, hasn't he? I mean, first up's Mo Salah he plays against, keeps him quiet in the first half. And then this week it's a combination of Gibbs White and then Pedro Neto, Daniel Podence.
And Adama Traore at the very end.
And Adama Traore, absolutely. And
the forgotten man.
indeed. But he was completely rock solid. And, you know, I mean, that's such a massive boost, obviously, for the US as well, as they look towards the World Cup. But for Fulham, I think, you know, there were probably some question marks around Robinson. But if he continues the form that he's shown so far, it's that's hugely encouraging, really encouraging.
Well, the Athletic's new soccer man will be delighted to hear that the US's chances are...
Absolutely. Can't argue with that. USA.
We're going to change the club to Fulham Soccer Club now, just to suit Jack and his new lexicon.
great stuff. It's an English word. It's an English word.
Yeah. It is an English word. One thing that I just wanted to touch on that we didn't mention in Monday's pod, I don't know how it got missed really, but I feel like came to prominence a little bit more with what we saw Monday night and Darwin Núñez getting sent off and the amazing shithousery from Joachim Andersen. By the way, appalling the abuse that he's received. Yes. Since then, just got to be said. And, you know, we love Joachim Andersen. So to see him get that is just abhorrent. I mean, it's abhorrent to anyone, but obviously we love Joachim. And to see that is disgusting. But anyway, my point is that Mitrovic, Jack, was... I can't work out if he was lucky to stay on the pitch. The headbutt that Darwin Núñez does is worse than Mitrovic. It's slightly more of a butt, and Mitrovic is more of a, I'm going to put my head in your face. But Mitrovic was lucky. The tackle was awful.
If it was against us, we'd want a red card, wouldn't we?
Almost it deserved a double yellow. That was my thinking.
I actually think, I don't necessarily think he's that lucky for the headbutt. I think he's lucky that he doesn't get booked for the foul beforehand. Because they both get booked, right, for the altercation. But I think the foul might be a yellow card.
Did he not get booked to the foul? I thought he got booked to the foul.
Surely the foul
didn't Gibbs White get booked as well?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, Gibbs White did get booked.
So therefore, you'd imagine that the yellows are as much for the altercation as anything else. But I think he's maybe lucky not to get booked for the... Well, he's lucky to get booked for whichever one he didn't get booked for.
He should have got... I think if it was against me, I would think he should be getting... Like Martinelli got last season, he should be getting two yellow cards for what he did. The tackle was bad and the reaction was bad.
I do think Morgan Gibbs-White instigates it. But you can't lose your cool like that.
Yeah, I think that's what Silva tried to say, was that, you know, Gibbs-White was started the reaction. But for me, it was a red card. I mean... Bruno Lage was saying the tackle was worth a red card. I'm not so sure about that. It was absolutely a yellow card challenge.
Yes.
And the reaction was absolutely a yellow card reaction. You can't react like that. Clearly the frustration from the penalty was lingering there. But, you know, Fulham are fortunate. Yeah, there's no doubt about it for me. I mean, I was pretty surprised he wasn't sent off, but pretty relieved because he was in my fantasy football team. And I already had Darwin Núñez in there because
disaster.
-5. You're on minus points everywhere.
There he was before the season, picking up his FPL credentials. He got a -5.
Let's move on.
You didn't play any of those captain, please.
No.
Oh, phew. Someone in the Fulhamish community, FPL, I've got to shout him out. Ryan Vegand, triple captained Gabriel Jesus, 57 points. I've never seen anything like it. Shot him right to the top of the leaderboard. Part of me almost wants to like criticize it because what are you doing triple captaining on the second week of the season?
A lot of people do that. The first, second week. Because there's so much chaos at the start of the season, you tend to find moments that happen. A lot of people triple captained Haaland first week, I know, who obviously got two goals and that would have worked. But
well, a lot of people would have triple captained him for the Bournemouth game and he only got an assist. So, but yeah, Mitrovic, lucky to stay on the pitch, I think. But thank God.
Thank God for that, yeah.
I mean, I think it was just one of those challenges, Peter, that he was... looking to stop the attack. Sometimes you think Mitrovic is not as subtle at the dark arts as other players, because he did almost like karate kick him. And there is a way of fouling, but not looking so bad. He just didn't do it very well. I think that was the problem. I mean, it's always a yellow card when you do that kind of challenge, whether you do it badly or well, because it stops an attacking opportunity.
I'm not sure he was trying to be subtle. I think he was clearly trying to stop the break, but I think the point was, you know, that he hadn't really been able to do that anyway. He had to cover a lot more ground than probably would have wanted to before taking out Gibbs-White. And then obviously, you know, does still commit the foul and then there's a reaction and it's, fortunate.
Well, thank God, because he'll be available for Saturday's game against Brentford, which we'll come to. A bit of transfer news. We discussed both these players last week, so there's not an awful lot more to be said. But Peter, it seems that Willian is at Motspur Park, so he may be a Fulham player soon.
Yeah, or he's becoming a minority shareholder in the club.
One of the two.
He's playing for a different kind of role. Fulham are exploring a deal to sign him. Obviously, he... ripped up his contract at Corinthians in Brazil last week after a difficult spell there. Struggled with the abuse that he'd suffered, he and his family, and he wants to return to London. Seems like a fit that makes sense, considering that Fulham needs depth options, as we were talking about at the start of the podcast. Obviously, there are question marks about how good he is now. His, you know, in terms of that final season at Arsenal, wasn't great. Obviously, he hasn't had the best time in Brazil either, but at his best, he was an outstanding player. He's won countless trophies, more than 300 appearances for Chelsea. And, you know, if he is going to be a rotation sort of option and he can show glimpses of that quality, then I think it's something that certainly will make sense. Again, we'll just see how that progresses. It's something that is on the table. Obviously, he's been at Motspur Park to be assessed, and then we'll see what happens.
Good penalty taker. It's worth pointing out. I'll just add to that. It's one of those where if someone was like, do you want this transfer to happen kind of just flat? I'd be like, probably not. But on a free transfer with the current situation we're in, on wages of apparently around 30K a week, it makes plenty of sense. For someone who can play three different positions is a good dead ball option. And, you know, at his age, I think we'll probably be happy to be a contingency member of the squad because he wants to be back in London. That's okay, I think. Yeah. I have my issues with it as well. When it came through, I was like, I don't like this. But the more I think about it, and the more it's kind of just a, you know, an open depth option on relatively small wages for the Premier League. Now, I know that sounds ridiculous to say when someone's on 30K a week, but you know what I mean? You know, I think that's it might well be relatively sensible if he can fit in and he's willing to put the work in and do these things. Now, if he's coming here for a retirement payday, my problem with it was that it doesn't fit the model of what Fulham have tried to bring in this summer. And, you know, you look at the Kluivert deal, for example, on the flip of that, that does fit. It's young, hungry players with a point to prove, you know, that I can get on board with. This is very much not that. You know, but you can maybe chuck it in with the Duffy thing as a depth option that with a bit of a Premier League experience to try and guide Fulham through, you know, what is going to be a tricky season. You know, if he comes in and shows the work ethic and all of those things that we're expecting, and there's been no real reason to doubt that, I don't think, over any of his time in England. His work ethic was always, you know, even when Chelsea were desperate that season, he was their best player and he was the one that kind of dragged them out of things. So if he comes in with that attitude, I think I've come round to it being a relatively good depth signing.
Yeah, I mean, as recently as the 2021 season, he got 9 assists in the Premier League. Season before that, 11 goals, 9 assists. Like, it's only a couple of seasons since Willian was prolific. And I hopefully doing it at a lower level with Fulham. We've got an injury crisis. Yes, if you'd have said at the beginning of the summer, would you like to sign Willian? I'd have thought, no, what are we doing? Right now in the circumstances, it seems to make a lot of sense. Jack, you talked about Justin Kluivert last week and what he brings to Fulham. The Standard are reporting that Fulham have had an offer accepted for Kluivert. So this one looks to be getting closer. It doesn't feel like it's going to happen this week, whereas Willian might happen before the Brentford game. I reckon this Kluivert one's got a few more days before it's over the line. But seems like he's quite motivated potentially to come to Fulham, which is a good thing.
Yeah, the reports out of Italy today, I was reading something from Il Tempo earlier, are that, you know, Roma actually accepted a bid from Nice and Kluivert said no because he wants to come to Fulham. So if that's true, then that is a good sign. Now, there are obviously things to iron out. The evaluations, the deal between the two clubs doesn't seem to be there yet, but he seems to be someone who wants to come to Fulham. You know, remember him coming up at Ajax and it being a very exciting one that when he was coming through, and he is a winger, you know, this is something worth pointing out. He's one of those players who likes to remain wide. And for someone who likes to remain wide, his goals and assists record is not bad. Now he had a couple of blips. The year at Leipzig didn't go to plan. And that first year at Roma wasn't great. But, you know,
still got 8 assists.
Yeah, exactly. This is the thing. You know, you're looking at most of these things and thinking, okay, this is a player who you can make things happen. He's not quite as dynamic as perhaps, you know, you'd maybe expect. He's a good dribbler again. You know, I like the fact that he can carry the ball, and he loves regaining possession. Like, he is one of those who loses the ball and will work like a dog to get it back. That is, you know, that's another one that you go, okay, crowd will like that, right? That's the kind of thing that you know, the Craven Cottage crowd will like, you know, someone who works hard and who has a point to prove. And again, it just fits this mold that Fulham have been kind of looking at this summer. I like it. Now, I know that his stats aren't unbelievable. You know, I was reading Jack Stradley's profile of him the other day on Fulhamish, and he was saying it's a gamble, and I agree with that. I do agree. But it's an interesting one in terms of where we get to, and someone who's a little bit of a different profile and might just offer us something different. And I think the fact that he fits, you know, what I'm calling the model is a good thing for me.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. Afterwards, I'm going to be speaking to Johnny Langtry from the Fulham Foundation. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. It is Sammy here, joined by Johnny Langtry from the Fulham Foundation, part of the Kix Refugee initiative that they're doing. Johnny, great to have you on.
Good morning. Yeah, great to be here. Thanks, Sammy.
And Johnny, just to start off with, obviously you work for the Fulham Foundation, but you are a Fulham fan as well. What a dream job to work for the club you support.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Been a fan for a very long time. Been to a lot of matches as well. It's just great to be part of the club, really.
Yeah. What's your favourite memory of supporting Fulham?
Oof, too many. I think most recent would be the home Luton game. That was fantastic. Yeah. But I was there for some of our Europa League run as well. So I think the Juventus game would probably be my top highlight.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I ask that question, I sometimes go like, well, I and if you're above a certain age, you're probably going to say the Europa, but yeah, you've got to give the cliche answers sometimes. I think if you try wing it that it was, I don't know, beating Stoke in 2010, you're probably lying to yourself, aren't you? But anyway, Johnny, lovely to have you on. The Fulham Foundation is something that I think Fulham fans see the fundraising, but don't often see the work or where the funds go to. We often see the Fulham Foundation days. And I was aware of the refugee program, Kix Refugee, but I'd be lying if I said I know an awful lot about it. So yeah, be very interested to hear exactly the work you're doing, because it seems like very, very important work in the lives of young men around London.
Yeah, so the Kix Refugee program, we work with a few hundred refugee and asylum seekers on a weekly basis. We run different football sessions in lots of different boroughs of London, mostly doing football sessions, but we're looking at taking a bit more of a holistic approach, looking at coaching opportunities for these young people, sort of a bit of aftercare after our sessions as well. And mainly, I think the thing is just making them feel welcome into the Fulham family.
Yeah, where have these refugees generally travelled from? I imagine a lot will have come over in the Syria migration crisis that happened a few years ago. And I imagine some of them will have done that awful journey on the boats as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's from all over, really. You have a lot of people from Northern Africa, the Middle East, some parts of South America as well. Yeah, they've had a tough time of it getting here. So I feel like it's the very least we can do, really, is put on these football sessions for them.
And what, when you say a football session, are we talking a five-a-side match? Are we talking more kind of coaching and drills? Like, what is involved in putting on a football session?
Well, usually it's a mixture. So we'll have some fitness-based drills and things like that at the start. And then usually we'll go into matches. Some of our sessions are very, very highly attended. So we'll go straight into a tournament where there's about 65, 70 young people at a session. Yeah, it's just a great chance for them to sort of interact with their peers, build up their own social networks in the city, and just have a chance to get outside and get fit.
Yeah, I imagine that social side is maybe the element of this that's not really factored. It's more than just giving people an opportunity to kick a ball about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, football is a universal language, right? And it can be played by anyone, anywhere. So to factor in that for them, I think, is a key thing. And it gives them, and myself, things to look forward to each week.
And I imagine if you have travelled land and sea to come to the UK, I imagine that possessions are not in abundance. I saw Niskin Scabano doing a video where he was looking to get Fulham fans to donate old football boots. I mean, it seems mad that that's required here, but I guess if you've travelled all that way, bringing in a pair of football boots isn't necessarily high on the priority list. How did that kind of initiative to get fans to donate boots go? And was that a success?
Well, it's still ongoing, but yep, so far it's been very successful. It was something that I started when I began this new role as youth engagement officer for Kicks Refugees, because a lot of the sessions I went to, I noticed that a lot of these young lads aren't wearing the right thing for football. And it's, you know, it's not going to be conducive to them improving at football. So we sort of we've reached out to the first team, academy and fans, other members of the foundation as well. And so far the donations have been incredibly generous. We've had things from the first team, from the academy. Yeah, the club has been really, really on board with this and really helpful.
And if anyone has a spare pair of boots lying about, I know that I do, what's the best way of donating things like football boots? Is there a link on the foundation website?
There isn't. You can get in touch with me at kicks@fulhamfc.com, and I can signpost to you to where we have our collection boxes or where they can be posted.
Okay, great. And just generally on the wider Fulham Foundation, as I mentioned, I feel like often as supporters, we see the fundraising, but we don't know necessarily all about where the fundraising goes to. There's just so many parts of the Fulham Foundation, though, and so many elements to where it supports people in and around the area. What has your experience been like working with the foundation and the difference it's made, maybe just outside of the refugee program, which is obviously the kind of individual part that you look after?
Well, I've absolutely loved it. I think community work through sport is just amazing. And I think it's something that the foundation does brilliantly. I mean, we run 25 different programs from all ages and abilities. You know, our youngest participants would be three, our oldest might be 93. And so it really is all encompassing and bringing people together and building better lives through sport.
And you were telling me before, Johnny, that not only do the refugees on your program get to play football, but they also get to watch football. I'm of the understanding that a few of them will be at the Brentford game on Saturday, hopefully seeing a Fulham win.
Yeah, let's hope. No, you're absolutely right. The club, like I said, have been incredibly generous when it comes to this program. Well, all of our programs at the foundation, really. And we'll actually have 40 young refugee and asylum seekers at the Brentford game. For a lot of them, it'll be their first Premier League match experience. And let's just hope it's their first Fulham win as well.
Yeah, well, let's hope it's Fulham's first win of the season. It'll be great to have them there. And it's so interesting when you hear about all of these small things that happen kind of behind the scenes, quite under the radar, and all the great work that is done supporting just every different demographic in the local area. And I imagine that's where most of the Fulham Foundation's work is based, is kind of in that Southwest London bubble, in and around kind of the New Malden, Fulham areas, where the majority of the fan base, certainly UK-wide, is based.
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of sessions running there, but we reach out into Surrey as well and other parts of South London too.
And Johnny, fundraising for the Fulham Foundation is year long, not just around those kind of foundation matches that happen each year. If people are interested in fundraising for the foundation, how do people go about that? You know, if someone maybe wanted to run a local marathon or run a half marathon or something along those lines, but they wanted to do it for the Fulham Foundation because they're a big Fulham fan and they like to support the charity associated with the club they love. Can people do that? Can people go about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can always find us on the Foundation's part of the official club website. But since it's our 20th year as the official charity of Fulham FC, we've started a new fundraising platform on Infuse. So if any fans are interested in donating through there, they'll be sent invites to any events that we might be hosting. They can find out a lot more about what each program does as well.
Fantastic. Well, we'll stick a URL in the description of the podcast if you're interested in doing any fundraising for the great work that the foundation are doing, including your fantastic Kicks Refugee initiative, Johnny. Definitely keep up the good work. While I have you chatting Fulham, score prediction for Saturday, how do you see it going?
Oof, I'm going to go 3-1 Fulham. I think we've played really well the first two games. I've been really pleased. So. Yeah. Hopefully, I think we can carry it through. It's a huge game, obviously, big local derby. But no, I'm backing the boys, 3-1.
Yeah, I'm hopeful that we can get it done. It feels like crunch time on the pitch, doesn't it? I guess with the games coming up as well. Win and it's a fantastic start. Lose and I think we'll be a bit nervous. And a draw doesn't really help anyone. But fingers crossed, get the win, Johnny. I like your confidence there. And 3-1 would be a fantastic scoreline. Johnny, thank you so much for coming on. We'd love to have you on again to chat about the good work that you're doing and top stuff to you and all your colleagues.
Thanks so much. Cheers, Sammy.
Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy here, back with Jack and Peter. I just quickly wanted to say a big shout out to everyone backing Fulhamish in the Fulhamish community, supporting the content we do. As a thank you, they get access to the Fulhamish Telegram, which is awesome. We've got three different chats, a kind of general Fulham chat, a transfers chat, which is still popping off. Lots of rumours about Clivert and Willian at the moment. And there's also our tickets, pubs and away day chat. The Fulhamish community is just simply a way of people backing our content if they wish. We don't put any of our content behind a paywall. We keep it free to access. But if you like what we do and you want to support us with a little amount monthly, then obviously we are hugely appreciative. It goes an awful long way. All the details are on the Fulhamish website. But of course, if you can't or you don't want to or you can't afford to, all our content remains absolutely free, and that is completely up to you. Right, just before we look at the Brentford game and answer some of your emails, I think we should have a quick word about the under-21s. A big win against Chelsea on Monday night, and Luke Harris bagging a hat-trick. Of course he did. What a bags man that man is.
Hat-trick Harris.
Yeah, no surprises, is there?
What a player.
I think that's his first game for 21s. Of this season, and three classic Luke Harris goals as well. I think the second one was the left foot shot to the near post, which is a really excellent finish, that one. And then the other two are just him being in the right place at the right time. It's one of those intangible attributes that is which is, you know, basically natural. That's what Steve Wigley described it to me when I was asking about him, and he just says you can't coach that. He's got it. You've just got to nurture it in the right way. And, you know, I think that's a really important result for him, a performance by him, because, you know, obviously he's been in around the first team for the whole of preseason. He's liked by Marco Silva. And it's just a reminder of his quality, you know, a reminder of what he can bring and why he deserves to stay within the first team picture. And hopefully he'll get a look in at some Premier League minutes, because clearly he's a talented kid who, can go a long way, providing everything stays in place and everything falls into place for him.
Yeah, Jack, a brilliant 3-0 win over Chelsea at King's Meadow. You know, this is a hell of a result to be pulling off, you know, early doors of the season. We also won the first under-21s game of the season against West Ham. The calibre of this under-21 side looks good for the upcoming season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Adrian Pajazzi, who I thought was absolutely remarkable in this game. I thought he was absolutely incredible. And he dominated Kani Chukwuemeka, who's just signed for Chelsea for, what, 20-odd million from Aston Villa, and was the star of England's unders campaign this summer as they won the Euros. It was a really, really good performance. And, you know, just when you look at that and you think, okay, who's that? And I was talking to, you know, one of the Chelsea bloggers who does their youth academy, and he was like, who was your number eight? He was absolutely outrageous. And I was like, yeah, that's Pajazzi. He's, you know, a couple of first team appearances and trained around with the first team squad, but hasn't quite made, you know, the full jump yet. A couple of cup appearances and that. But I just thought he was sensational. Like the best player, you know, Harris aside, the best player on the park, I thought. And, you know, to go back to Luke Harris and those goals that he scored, the fact he's playing up there against, you know, Ethan Ampadu, he's playing against Trevor Chalobah. This was a very, and, you know, and Ben Chilwell out on that left-hand side. This is a very good Chelsea side, a very good Chelsea side. And, you know, you look at how Fulham put them to the sword in this game, and you think, wow, this is a really special side. And maybe one that we'll look at in years to come and go, wow, they all played together. That was pretty remarkable. But, you know, a word to the defence too, because Omari Hutchinson signed for Chelsea this summer from Arsenal. They finished third, I think, in PL2 last season, and Hutchinson was kind of their key man, made the jump over to Chelsea, and was kept relatively quiet by all accounts, by this side. Now, obviously, we saw these two centre-backs, Idris and McAvoy, and they kept him very quiet all game. He's a very good footballer. So, yeah, a shout-out to the whole team, but some really, really impressive performances here, and not one to be sniffed at against a very strong Chelsea squad.
And also a note to the fact that the Fulham women get underway this weekend. They're playing Sutton United on Sunday at the VBS Community Stadium. Kickoff at 2:00, and it's free entry. So if you fancy going down there and supporting the Fulham women, then yeah, definitely head down to Sutton. Free football. You can never beat that. Right, let's come on then to the Brentford game. And it's the big one, Jack. It feels like ages since I've seen a Fulham-Brentford game. Obviously, we had the big playoff one. We played them in the Carabao Cup when we were in the Premier League and they were back in the Championship. But it feels like an awfully long time, particularly at Craven Cottage, since we've had this game. It's always got needle on it. It's never one that Fulham play particularly well in, apart from the one that mattered. I'm always tense. I'm always nervous. Weirdly, when I play QPR, I'm just excited because we're probably going to beat them again. Chelsea's just a bit of a free hit in a weird way because you know we're not going to beat them. Brentford's just always got needle to it, and I'm always extremely tense when the day rolls around.
Yeah, 100%. I was looking at that post about, you know, the rivals earlier, and I came to the conclusion that Chelsea's the game I'd like to win the most, but this is the one that I definitely don't want to lose the most. If that okay. makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I just don't want to lose. Now, obviously, it would be great to win, but I just can't deal with the yap if they beat us at the Cottage again. I think this is the first time the two sides have ever met in the top flight. I could be wrong, but I don't believe that it's ever been the case before. So it's a pretty big one in that regard. You know, and one of those moments that you're going to be like, okay, cool, this is a lot. And I imagine the atmosphere is going to be feverish. I imagine there's going to, you know, they'll come down on a boat or whatever they do for their big day out as usual. But on the whole, yeah, I mean, I think we saw last weekend that much as it pains us, they're a very good side. They're very well drilled. They press high. They are incredibly tactically organized, and they're set up shifts depending on who they're playing against. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see this as a tactical battle. Now, interestingly, obviously, we spoke right at the start about the fact that early on in the game against Wolves, we got opened up down the right-hand side a couple of times in those gaps. And that's the place that Brentford attacked against Manchester United. You know, that was the area that they looked at and gone, right, we can get in here. And so that's the early concern, I would suggest. You look at that and you think, okay, how do we stop that happening again? But yeah, it's, of course, I'm incredibly nervous. I'm incredibly stressed. But I'm looking forward to it too, in a kind of sick, I hate myself kind of way.
Yeah. We haven't played Brentford at Craven Cottage with fans there since 2018. And that was the Neil Mopay in the final minute during the Slav promotion season. So we're talking here 4 years since we've had a Brentford game at Craven Cottage, which is kind of wild because it feels like we've played them loads, and we have, but the biggest moments came during the behind closed doors football and the playoff final. Peter, what did you make of Brentford's win against United on Saturday? So much, and I'd be so annoyed if I was a Brentford fan, in fairness, is made
just generally.
Well, yeah, generally, I probably would just be angry every day. But I more meant the point, all the analysis is all about United, how bad they were, how De Gea needs to get dropped, how Maguire's crap, how Martinez isn't good enough. And the only Brentford chat I've seen is like, oh, they press quite well. And that's loosely been the analysis that I've seen. And actually, Brentford were awesome in that game. You just can't take it away from them. They were fantastic and they pushed United into all of those errors. Okay, yes, De Gea's is completely unforced, but other than that, it is all about how good Brentford were for me. And yes, okay, United have got their problems, but I mean, this is such a dangerous team, and I thought they might be ones looking likely for relegation, but if you play like that most weeks, then they're going to be nowhere near.
Yeah, no, I thought they'd struggle this year. Obviously, it's still very early, but as Jack said, they're tactically incredibly flexible and intelligent, and you saw that against United. I thought they were brilliant, as you said, and they pressed all of those weak spots in that United team. They were ruthless, you know, in those moments where United were, their heads were gone, Brentford made them pay, and that's a really important mental attribute to have in any team. And they'll cause problems again, you know, as Jack said, you know, they can play in those channels, either side of the centre half, between the fullbacks, through Ivan Toney, Brian Mbeumo. They've adapted quite well to that, to the system that they use with a 5 and a 3 and a 2. And they've brought in Mikael Damsgaard as well. It looks like a good addition.
They've signed really well again. I mean, they always do this, but they've signed really well as well. Hickey looks brilliant. Damsgaard is a wonderful player. Lewis Potter's a good player. It's just, and Ben Mee is slotted straight in. You're like, okay, cool. They've just done it again, haven't they?
Yeah. And so, yeah, they're going to cause problems. There's no doubt about it. They can play very direct, which we've seen lately. But yeah, if I was a Brentford supporter, I'd be furious, really, because they did more than press. They pressed smartly. They were clever in terms of how they moved the ball forward. Everything was planned, was organised. And you know, they used the home crowd as well. I mean, that'll be so important. And we've seen how that can make a difference for Fulham. And I'm sure the atmosphere on Saturday will make it a really tense game and a really competitive one. But I suppose if you're looking at it from a Fulham perspective, of course it matters that Fulham win. But I think 3 points here, and suddenly Fulham have a very good start to the campaign. And if a defeat and it's 2 points, and you're mildly concerned at that point, I think. So
if you lose, an unbeaten start becomes a winless streak.
Exactly. So, and just looking back at the results between Brentford and Fulham since, it's sort of rekindled in what, 2014-15 time, I think.
When we got relegated from the Premier League the first time, and they got promoted from League One.
Yeah, I think Fulham have only beaten Brentford 3 times. So
you don't need to remind us.
Sorry.
Okay, we won the big one though.
We won the one that matters.
Won the big one, yeah.
So, and we've not won at home.
No, I think last win at home against Brentford, you got to go back to, I think, 1990.
I guess
April 1990 that we haven't beaten Brentford.
So let's end that this weekend, shall we?
Yeah,
let's put that
please,
to the sword. Let's get rid of that curse.
Jack, looking at the Fulham team,
yep.
Do you think there's any changes to be made? You talked about the right hand side. Kenny Tete I didn't think it was his best game against Wolves. I thought he got found out a little bit, and Babu came on very late on. Is that a potential change, or do you think Marcus Silva, injuries aside, is going to keep this pretty standard?
Yeah, I can't see many changes. I didn't think Kenny Tete was brilliant against Wolves. Equally, I think he's a better one-on-one defender than Mbabu is. I think Mbabu is a slightly more forward-thinking defender than Tete. And especially, I think Tete's probably best skill is his one-on-one defending in so many ways. So I can't see him changing it, but equally, if he does, I don't think that's a massive problem.
Peter, do you think, the only one is if someone like Willian signs and comes.
I don't think
There's no way he's coming straight in, is there? So barring injuries, we haven't really got any flexibility here to maneuver.
No, not particularly in forward areas. And to be honest, if Declan Reid and Kiwana were fit, I think they've done very well in those games. I wouldn't really want to, there was a case not to rotate them. So I can't see the midfield changing. We've seen how well Pellini and Reid have done, likewise in injuries and things dependent. I suppose it would just be defence, and it is just a case of whether there would be changes to even though that they have done quite well. So, a tough one. Maybe on the right back, maybe there's a potential for change there, but still part of a back four that kept a clean sheet. So, a tricky one.
I wondered if Shane Duffy might come in to try and counter Tony's aerial threat was the only thing that I was kind of considering, but I just don't see it.
Not in this one. Maybe in, you almost say, one of the upcoming games where Arsenal, Spurs away, that might be a place where Silva thinks, well, these are tougher games. We're not expected to win here. Maybe this is a chance to blood new people. But we've got that opportunity on Tuesday as well against Crawley in the Carabao Cup, where if he wants to give people like Leno, Diop, Mbabu their first proper run out, he's literally got a game in 3 days where he's able to do it. So I don't think he's going to take any risks in what is probably our most important game of the month by far, and not just because it's Brentford. A couple of questions before we finish. This one from Sam Purcell, an old topic, but with new names, I guess. Said, hi, Fulhamish. Heard this subject on the pod at various times and feels like an appropriate moment to consider it again. Luke Harris has just scored a hat-trick against a decent Chelsea under-21 squad. With Solomon and Wilson out, now feels like the perfect time to blood some youngsters. There's been much talk of another one or two attacking players coming in. Surely this blocks the pathway for Stansfield and Harris to make their way into the team. If not with now with 9 subs and a few injuries, then when can we? If we give the young players opportunities, then hopefully we'll have more of a chance of keeping some when the time comes around. How do you think the club should handle this? Keep up the good work from Sam. Peter, we saw Jay Stansfield come off the bench do very well. We also saw Tyrese Francois come on as well. Interesting one. I'd like to see Stansfield getting more minutes, and if Cliver and Willian means that doesn't happen, then that's obviously a big shame, but also we need to stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, I know we do talk about it a lot, and there is this balance between the two, and if you're the manager, you want to have the strongest squad you can to achieve your goal, which is to stay in the Premier League, which, as we've seen, is proven very, very difficult. And I think there is a general sense that if Fulham can be a stable Premier League team, then giving players those opportunities becomes easier because there isn't that same pressure and expectation and need to achieve a goal that really is so defining, I suppose, for the club in terms of how it operates. Fundamentally, yeah, I mean, these are the great opportunities for them. The 9 subs can help. It can also be a hindrance because, as we saw with Luke Harris, he's gone down to 21s to get minutes, because if you're always on the bench, you're not going to get the minutes, and it affects your training load. If you're going through the week, you may train up to a game, but the games are at different times for the 21s. So there's loads to sort of think about and balance for development. But you want to see them getting a chance. And it was fantastic to see Jay Stansfield come off the bench to make his Premier League debut. A fantastic story. A player who's scored loads of goals. And a really proud moment for his family as well. I'm sure they would have absolutely loved to see him get on and do so well. And it's giving him those opportunities, as well as the others like Harris. Pajaziti, as Jack said before, he got minutes last year. Giving them the right opportunities to grow and develop. And if you think you can, if there is an expectation that they can be and play at a Premier League level, then they should get those chances. Now, The flip side is Joe Stansfield a right winger? Is he a left winger? Is that his best sort of position? And therefore, if you're throwing him on for 5 minutes in his wrong position, is that really that helpful? Like so with Francois on the left. So there is a balance to be struck as well. I think for Harris, you'd want him in that Pereira role. I think just playing off Mitrovic, which he's done in pre-season. So, yeah, I'm not. It's one of those, isn't it? I mean, I think if you sign a player like Willian, it can be quite. I imagine it could be quite dispiriting potentially, if you think that blocks the pathway. But if it doesn't block the pathway, and there is still those opportunities, aided perhaps by a good cup run, then maybe we look at it in a different way. And of course, there are these injuries. So if they're, as long as they're in the thinking and they're still considered as given those opportunities, then it's a positive thing. But I think from a Fulham perspective and in the club perspective, that the number one goal is to stay up. And that can and does often conflict with you know, bringing through some of those best players.
All right, well, we leave it there for today's podcast. What a massive game on Saturday. And of course, we'll have a podcast on Sunday reacting to whatever happens in the derby.
Mitrovic hat-trick, mate. It's going to be okay.
Oh.
Luke Harris off the bench with a fourth.
Oh, my word.
Just to put it to bed. Thanks very much. Good night, Vietnam.
That would actually be everything to me. As ever, we get the people in the Fulhamish community to name the podcast. And there is just no debate on which one gets the name today. Tim Clark with the best name by an absolute country mile. Get this. Bees, fees and threes. So bees for Brentford. Fees talking about transfers and threes talking about Luke Harris getting his hat trick against Chelsea in the under 21s. I thought that was absolutely fantastic, Tim. Exceptional. So, yeah, a round of applause to you. Thank you to my guest today, Peter Rutzler from his cupboard. Thank you.
No, thank you, Sammy. As always, always a pleasure.
And it's got progressively darker as it's gone on, I think, because the sunlight's going, so it's looking even more it's looking like even more like a understairs cupboard as the podcast has gone along. And Jack in his not Brentford shirt, thank you.
Thank you very much, Sammy. Thank you for having me as ever.
Well, should we have a celebratory / commiseratory pint afterwards, whatever happens?
Seems like the only way, doesn't it? Seems like the only way. Win or lose, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, thank you very much for listening today. Have a lovely end to your week. And fingers crossed, Fulham can do the business against the Bees on Saturday. You whites!
You whites!